Hello there, sir. How you doing?
Hello there.
Hey. Let me introduce you for a sec, okay?
Yes.
Are you a betting man? Alec Holden is.
No, I'm not.
Okay, Alec.
I think that's my only bet, and I think I'm wise to stop there.
By the way, I find him easy to understand.
Yeah, beautiful.
All right. Alec Holden is on the phone with us. Alec is in Epsom, Surrey, UK. And Alan, about 10 years ago, bet a bookie that he would live to be 100. So that means you were 90 when you placed the bet, right?
That's right.
And they gave him odds of 250-1, which means for his 100-pound bet, he gets £25,000, which is about $50,000.
Yes.
That's very good. Now, Mr. Holden?
It almost pay for a trip to America, wouldn't it?
Almost get you here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Holden, first off, congratulations.
Yes, thank you very much, yes.
You sound great for 100, and obviously your hearing is fine.
Yes, I've been to a big party this morning. My local gymnasium.
No kidding. You work out.
I go about once or twice a week. Yes.
So are you... Tell me the things you can still do at 100. Do you play shuffleboard? Do you play games?
Yes, I play chess every day. Also run a chess club. And I've been a singer all my life.
A singer?
A singer in different choirs and choral societies and such like. And I suppose I attribute that to my... I have no breathing problems.
No breathing problems?
No.
No.
You get it all.
What do you like to sing the best, sir?
What's your favorite song?
Pardon?
Can you give... can you do a Chim Chimney, Chim Chimney, Chim Chim Tree?
Yes.
How would you want to?
Yes.
Yes, but I won't. Here you. That's wonderful.
Could you sing a little bit for us this morning? It would really brighten up our day.
No, I'm off singing these days.
Oh, you're done singing.
My voice is beginning to leave me, I'm afraid.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yes.
Now, do you have a lot of friends? That must be tough when you get to be 100 years old. Friends, obviously, not all of them can make it that high.
This has been very received with it. People seem to like the idea of the bookmakers losing a wage.
Yeah, that's what people like.
Everybody seems. I feel sorry for myself, of course.
You do. Now, would you be willing to go double or nothing for 110?
No, I don't think.
You'd take the money.
A bird in the hand, I think it's worth two in the bush.
A bird in the hand. How did you get such good odds? I mean, at 90, 250-1, did you tell them, you know, I've got a heart condition, or how did you get them to give you such a good bet?
It was good odds, I suppose, but 100 was a mythical age that day for a man to live to. So I'm glad it's been some incentive to carry on, although it doesn't make any difference, really, of course. But I expect I should live a little more luxury from now on.
Yes, you'll have whatever you like. Alec, you've seen the world change a lot in 100 years.
Yes, I remember the First World War quite well, quite well. Yes, I was a sort of... I went into the country then for a while the Zeppelins were coming over and the German Gothels were coming over, and so I escaped that, and I escaped the Second World War. I was a school teacher for some time, and then I suppose I've been very lucky, really. People say to me, "How lucky you are," and I said, "Well, I don't know. I can't see so well as I could. I can't hear so well. I can't walk so well. I'm clumsy." Despite all that. I keep going, and I go to the gym every week. I do the singing, and I play chess every day.
Yeah. You sound great, Alec. You sound great to me. Let me ask you what do you still follow the news today? And do you follow, for example, do you get on the computer at all? Do you have modern conveniences, or
I have everything I have everything that I need, and I follow the news, of course. Yes.
What do you think of the way? What do you think of the state the world is in right now?
Well, I think the old people, they've been so well looked after as we are today. The old people. Mm-hmm. I can remember my great grandfather was a school teacher. And to live at the age of 65 was pretty good then, because the people are so well looked after now. I am extremely well looked after by different services here.
Yeah. And do you have a MySpace page or a YouTube account?
Do I have one?
And do you have an email address?
Yes, I have an email address.
It's actually how we found him, is emailing back and forth on the Internet.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. We would love to, if it's okay with you, we'll have people send you happy birthday messages.
Well, of course, yes.
All right,
yes.
We'll put that on our website.
Yes.
Mr. Holden, I love the sound of your voice and your accent. Could you say something for me? Could you repeat something?
What would you like me to say?
If you don't eat your meat, you can't have any pudding.
Do I have one?
If you don't eat your meat... You can't have any pudding.
I talk to you?
Yeah. Would you say that for me?
Yes. What do I always say to you, Mike?
He wants you to say it because it's on a Pink Floyd record, and it sounds really cool.
You are a teacher. You are the teacher to me.
If you don't eat your meat, you can't have any pudding.
Tell me where you're speaking from.
Seattle.
Seattle.
Yes, mm-hmm. Sir.
That's a long way away, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Well, I hope to come to America.
He does a job for hoops, Mike.
Yeah.
Not for free.
If you don't pay me, I'm not going to say it. Yes, Joe.
Speaking of eating, what do you put in your body? We've talked about what you do to keep your brain active and your exercise. What kind of things have you been eating and drinking for the last 100 years?
I eat what I like. I drink what I like. I don't worry about anything.
Nice.
As many holders as possible. And I have porridge for breakfast.
Porridge for breakfast. And you and
I say.
Do you things in moderation, would you say?
Yes. A glass of sherry per day. And I think the main thing is to keep breathing.
Keep breathing is important.
Right. That's the deal breaker.
That's very good, yeah. And now, if you have an email account, you no doubt get all kinds of spam. Do you know what spam is?
Yes.
Yeah. Is spam a problem?
If you hang on, I'll get my email address.
Okay.
Do you get things in the mail? Your
Did
email.
He say he was he'll, getting
he'll,
us.
His he'll yes. give us his email address. Yes. Do you get things in the email soliciting you to buy things that you don't really need?
He's going to get his email.
Oh, that's spam. What he's going to get now.
He knew what spam was.
Yeah.
Spam, 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 spam.
Start! I don't know if they call it spam over there.
Do they?
I don't know.
Maybe spam is like not a nuisance to them. Mm-hmm. It's one of the prime food groups.
They might have a different word for it.
Let's ask.
I hear him fall over, Joe. I'm going to hurt.
Joe, you made him fall over.
Oh, just go up these four steps.
Hello.
Ow.
You actually shuffle, sent
shuffle,
him away.
Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle.
Ours, yes.
All right.
Are they on the phone? Yes. They want it. Yes.
They want the email address. All right.
Hello there.
Yes, hi.
It's Alex's son here, Brian.
Oh, hi, Brian, how are you? Hey, congrats on your dad. What an amazing guy.
All right, thanks. I gather you want our email address?
Yes, that would be great. So we want people to send him birthday greetings.
Oh, dear. That could get out of control.
It could, yes. So it's up to you. If you want to keep it quiet, that's fine.
Well, I don't think we would want dozens and dozens of emails, really.
Yeah. All right, that's okay, fair, that's fine.
It would take so long to look at them, you know.
You know, when we're done, though, we're going to put him on hold. We'd like to send him a little package with a shirt and some thanks.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
From Seattle.
Nice, very nice.
All right.
Do you need me anymore?
No, thank you. We'll say goodbye to your dad. Now, you're his son?
Yes, that's right.
And you've got to be yourself.
24, 25?
24, 25?
Oh, at least, yeah.
Yes.
a while ago, yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's say goodbye to Alex.
72, actually.
Wow. 72. Oh, now, right. Do you have a bet going to get to 100?
They won't take a bet on me.
I bet they won't.
No, not now. Now that you've got that pedigree. All right,
not
thanks.
Surprised.
All right.
Okay.
All right, we'll say thank you to Alec now. Alec Holden in Surrey, UK, is 100
yes.
years old.
Do you want the proper address?
Oh, sure.
Have you got it?
No, we don't, but I'm going to put you on hold to get it, okay?
Okay.
Because then I don't want to put it out on the radio.
No, of course not.
Of course not. All right. Would you do me a favor? Would you give our best to Alec and say congratulations again for us?
Of course I will.
All right, hold on. We'll let his son just talk to Mike. Isn't that sweet?
What have they got you doing now? Oh, for the love of Mike.
All right. Sweet. I didn't expect, at 100, we've had centenarians on before. Very, very difficult to understand, usually.
That guy is the most spry 100-year-old we've ever had.
And I swear he understood every single nuance. And then when we asked him a question, like, if you don't eat your meat, I'm sorry, I don't understand that one.
No, we're not going to do that. No, sir, not my favorite Pink Floyd album. Anything from Uma Guma, I'd have done for you.
You know what I mean? But then if you said something about betting odds, he would like immediately launch into...
You're going to double down to 110? No, I'm going to take the money and run.
And let me play. A blind British adventurer touched down in Sydney to end an epic 13,500-mile flight by microlight aircraft from London. This is an amazing aviation achievement. Miles Hilton Barber braved snowstorms, freezing temperatures, torrential downpours. It was a 59-day journey under the supervision of a sighted co-pilot, Richard Meredith Hardy. So you had a pilot and a co-pilot at sight still. It's amazing. He lost his eyesight to a hereditary condition 20 years ago, and he was trying to raise $2 million for a charity called Seeing is Believing, which works for the prevention of blindness in developing countries. Anyway, he has also conquered Mount Kilimanjaro and Mount Blanc, which I assume means mountain climbing.
Well, if he's in a plane, it doesn't.
Yeah, because if you're in a plane, conquering a mountain is a bad deal. He's run marathons in the Sahara and the Gobi Deserts, and even attempted to reach the South Pole, hauling a sledge over 250 miles of Antarctic ice, but I don't think he was successful there. Miles Hilton Barber, welcome to the Bob River Show. Hello.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Bob. Good morning. Good day. Good morning, is it?
Yeah, it is. Well, you're in Manila near the Philippines. Here it is 8:45 in the morning.
Okay, fantastic.
So good middle of the night to you.
Thank you very much.
This story is all over the world, and you have accomplished a lot, but I'll bet you that as important as the flight was, getting your message out is just as important.
Very much so, very much so. And, you know, Bob, when I started it, I thought the big thing was me flying to Australia, but having visited some of these hospitals where they're doing these cataract operations for children, I realized that the big thing is these children getting their sight back again. I won't see again in this lifetime, but if the next best thing is giving this gift of sight back to these children, we've been hoping to raise around $1 million. That will give sight back to some 20,000 children, which sounds good, but when you think about the fact there's 28 million blind people in the world who could see again tomorrow.
They could, and all it requires is the dough for the operation?
That's right.
Wow. Blindness, of course, afflicts a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. But to be blind when you don't have to be—that is a shame.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you about the flight. I am a licensed pilot myself, and I'm not sure though what a microlight aircraft is, and I'm not sure whether a lot of people know what that is.
Bob, it's some people call them an ultralight. So
okay, that's what we call it. Got it.
Yeah, a hang glider with an engine on the back with a tripod. So it's
typically that's a one-person seating craft, right?
This one is two-person.
Okay.
So I've had to have a sighted co-pilot with me because obviously civil aviation don't recognize me flying around the sky.
Yeah.
And
or you them
or the car, I imagine, is probably difficult.
Sorry?
Oh, the car would be difficult as well.
The car would be different, but as you may have seen, I hold the lap record for a blind driver on the Malaysian Grand Prix circuit. So
yeah, so you've done the car, that's right. And we're going to get into the mountain climbing as well.
Wouldn't Demolition Derby be a better choice for a blind driver?
Amazing stuff. So this is a microlight, and now I know what you're talking about. And it is, for anyone who's never seen one, picture a hand glider, put like a, it's almost like a lawnmower motor on the back of the thing. And how can you go that far?
Bob, this one has a 100 horsepower motor, and we had it set up so we could, we had 5.5 hours endurance, and for crossing from the Indonesian islands to Australia, we had almost 9 hours endurance. So, yeah, that was overloaded, certainly, but it got us there. What happened, you know, when I was a kid, I joined the Rhodesian Air Force. I was living in Zimbabwe, what used to be Rhodesia. Mm-hmm. I joined the Air Force, did not know I was going to go blind. My dad was a World War II fighter pilot and the head of civil aviation in the country, and that was my dream. And they kicked me out on my medical, even though I didn't know I was going to go blind. They said my sight wasn't good enough, I'd never be a pilot. Mm-hmm. And here I am, 38 years later, having, you know, blind as a bat, having gone off around the world. And the trick I found, Bob, was that I suddenly realized that all commercial pilots have to fly on instrument or to fly blind to qualify. So I thought all I need is to get that information into an audible form. So I had a company in Britain design the software and the hardware. All of it gets fed into a computer, and from there into my headphones via a little set of switches that Velcros onto my leg. So before I take off, I'll use a little Bluetooth keyboard, put in all the waypoints into my GPS system. My co-pilot will be looking at the map and where we're going. Once we take off, I've then got my distance to the next waypoint. I switch on my compass, my angular bank, very important. Blind, yes. Well, no one can, you know, fly level just by sense. You lose your sensation very quickly.
That's right.
Angular bank, compass. Every now and then I check my track.
You're getting instrument readings constantly fed to you so that you have situational awareness.
That's right, yes. The difficulty is that I'm getting one bit of information at a time. You as a sighted pilot can glance at all of your instruments and look back out the cockpit, out the window. I'm just listening to 210 degrees, 3 right, which is banking 3 right, mm-hmm. 212, 2 right. So I'm all the time I'm trying to balance my angular bank, listening to whether I'm banking left or right, checking which way I want to go on the compass, and trying not to overreact. The difficulty is we're flying very often in very lumpy thermal weather where I might be being thrown 20 or 30 degrees off track just in one thermal. So I can't always fly as smoothly and straight as you would, but we got fairly good at it.
But you did it. You did it. Your co-pilot was just for backup. You got the information. You got the sense. He didn't do anything.
Well, he certainly helped at times, you know, coming into crowded airports like Dubai where there were jumbos floating around. And there were jumbos, a pretty big airplane. I can't see it. So he was essential at times. At one stage, we went through a very bad tropical storm where visibility, even for him, was about 30 meters. It was like flying through a waterfall. It was just torrential, and thunder and lightning had forced us right down almost to sea level.
You mentioned that your information comes to you audibly and one item at a time. I hope your system is prioritized, because it would make sense that I don't want you to get, it's 68 degrees. Your seatbelt is buckled.
Yeah.
7:55. The mountain is 20 feet up.
Yeah.
Does the system give you the most important thing first?
It's got to read it real fast, too. Can you describe what you're hearing in terms of how fast it's speaking to you?
Yes. I mean, if I just had my compass, and I can choose what to switch on and switch off. I've got 32 options, and I choose what I want to listen to, and at any stage I can switch a particular bit of information off from that instrument. Most of the time I'm not listening to most of my kit. I'll just switch it on, like my track, for example. I'll only check it maybe every 10 or 15 minutes just to see if I'm
still on track, yeah. So, and like pilots look at the six most important gauges, they call them the six-pack, right? And are you getting that flow of information constantly?
Not even that. All I'm getting typically, once I'm airborne and I'm basically, I know, listen, I'm flying on a heading of 210 degrees and there's a bit of a crosswind. I'm just listening to the compass and my angular bank, so it's 210 degrees. If it was just the compass, it would be going 210, 212, 211, 216. And, you know, as I'm drifting around, if I put in the angular bank, it'll then say compass 212, bank 3 right. which means I've got 3 degrees of bang to the right. Compass, 2 thirds. So if I've got more than one thing, it'll speak the...
So the plane is speaking to you about your situation at all times. By the way, for people who don't know about pilots, when they refer to the six-pack, you hope they're referring to those instruments. Yes, Joe.
But I could see how you would need a sighted person on approaches, because I don't think there are any instruments, or correct me if there are, that... If you're touching down in Zimbabwe, your plane's not going to say...
Zimbabwe?
Yeah. There's
the wet part.
There's an elephant on the runway. I mean, there's, you know...
There has been a coup. Armed soldiers are waiting for your arrival.
You guys are great comedians. You're in the wrong business, I think.
Yeah, we should be in the...
We should be flight
pilots. Yeah.
All right, good news for you. We got a runway. Bad news is it's underwater.
Yeah. So what I do...
He's asking about the whole landing process. Do you use an autopilot to some degree?
I've got no autopilot. Everything is totally manual. All the stuff is doing is giving me information. What I do about it is totally up to me.
What about the flare, then, when you actually do touch down?
What I typically do, I mean, if I've got, if I know the there's a commercial runway, it says 2 and 210 degrees, I know that's it. So I can put it as a waypoint on my GPS before I take off, that's a waypoint, might be waypoint 6 or whatever I call it. I then come in on finals at 210 degrees. If there's a bit of, let's say there's a 5 mile an hour, 5 knot crosswind, I'll work that out as I'm coming in. I'm checking my track very critically, and I can sort out my track with just a new angle.
You can crab the airplane to taking into account what the crosswind is in order to come in straight to the runway.
That's right. So then I'm listening to my distance to that waypoint, and I'm listening to my altimeter, you know, 310, 300, 280 feet, whatever.
50, 49, 48.
That's right. Well, so, but the difficulty is I've only got a barometric altimeter. Siemens Systems actually were going to give me or loan me a wonderful microwave-based system that was accurate to within 2 inches at 1,000 feet. It's the same system they use...
The kind of accuracy you want when you're landing, yeah.
So that would be great, because that would give me a very accurate reading of...
So you can land. You can actually flare and land without seeing.
Yes, not always... That brilliantly, you wouldn't.
That was the sweetest way you could.
Hey, I've had some bumpy really landings.
I'd go with you, Miles.
I'd rather go with you than Bob. I've landed with him. He thinks the planet's in Braille.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, basically, the fact is that it was essential having my co-pilot with me. He was a necessity, not a luxury. But this is the first time, Bob, that anyone's attempted this sort of thing. I don't know of any other blind person who's attempted or flown an aircraft and actually flown and navigated himself for any distance. Another person in Britain flew around Britain in a light aircraft a couple of years ago, but he was just being told what to do by the pilot sitting next to him. He had no independent instrument readout for himself. So this is new stuff, and we're going to continue developing it, and I'm hoping it'll be a new bit of kit for blind people to do a fair degree of flying, and also for blind sailors. My brother, by the way, is totally blind as well. He sailed a yacht solo from Africa to Australia, Durban to Fremantle, totally blind, totally alone, 8 years ago, the only blind person in world history to do so, relying on speech output on all of his navigational instruments. So that's what got me going and thinking about, you know, that my blindness wasn't a handicap, it was a challenge.
Well, London to Sydney, just to fly there in a jet or anything, is a huge undertaking. To do so in an ultralight and to do so without sight is incredible. Is this mission accomplished, or is there a temptation to continue and circumnavigate?
He's going to the moon next, Joe.
Well, you could go all the way around the world.
Well, I've been looking at all sorts of things, but I'd be tempted to get a few more horsepower and go a bit quicker. You know, sometimes with a headwind heading from the Indonesian place, Kupang, across to Darwin, we had a 30-mile-an-hour, or 30-knot headwind, and we're only cruising at 70. So all of our fuel estimations were out the window, and we ended up having to divert to a shorter place in Western Australia. It wasn't an official international landing place, but it got us there. It still took us 6.25 hours with over 5 hours at 10,000.
So it might not be possible to even keep going the other way.
No. I guess what Joe was also asking is, what's the undone challenge for you now? You've done
the undone challenge. I want to be the first blind aviator to fly through the sound barrier in a jet fighter. I've got access already to an old Hawker Hunter. You know, it was a good fighter jet in the 1960s, but its top speed is only about 600 knots. But you can get it through the sound barrier in a bit of a dive. But my
co-pilot
friend doesn't want to test a 50-year-old airframe in a 30-degree dive. But we're just playing around with different options. And I'm trying to say to people, whether you can see or not, there's a lot more that you can do than you think you can. The only limits in your life are those you accept yourself. And I've realized that blindness isn't such a handicap. As long as you start thinking about what can a blind man do instead of what can't he do, your life changes, your attitude changes. So, I mean, I'm not trying to live an independent life as a blind person, but I am trying to say to you guys as well, who've got sight, Helen Keller, the famous blind woman, said that sight without vision is equal to blindness. So there's a lot of people with 20/20 vision, Bob, who are blind to their own potential or to situations around them. So I'm, you know, been trying to physically give sight back to as many children as I can, but also to sighted people like all of you, saying, are you really aiming as high as you could? Do you know your own potential? Are you, you know, too mediocre in what you think you can do? The only thing holding you people back is 5 inches, and that's the distance between your ears.
Miles,
stupidity
amazing.
Is my biggest obstacle.
Miles Hilton Barber in Manila, the Philippines. Miles, will put the information about you on our website. Keep going.
Thank you very much, Bob. God bless you all. God bless America.
There's a story today about a drunken groom, and the bride grabbed his more sober brother and married him.
Good for her.
What?
Well, you know, marriage is for life, and you shouldn't just marry the guy you were supposed to on your wedding day.
The dude showed up drunk at his own wedding.
Who hasn't?
I haven't.
You weren't a little in the bag of nerves on your wedding day?
Talking about after the celebration afterwards, maybe.
Usually, and to be fair, usually it's the bride that is the more tipsy one, because she's really nervous.
She's in there.
Not because of that. Give me that look.
Does this dress make me look 4 months pregnant?
We went in different directions, but
yeah, I know.
But they both worked. And then, by the way, the story's from India. Patna, India. Do you know where that is, Eric? Patna?
I don't. I'll have to look it up.
Villagers at a wedding in eastern India decided that the groom had arrived too drunk to get married. And so the bride married the groom's more sober brother. The groom was drunk, had misbehaved with guests. Local villagers chased him away from his own wedding. A police officer told the Reuters news service that the younger brother readily agreed to take the groom's place beside the beautiful teenage bride. Do you know anything about the wedding customs in India?
Yeah, often a lot of these marriages are arranged ahead of time. Sometimes, frequently with the arranged marriages, the groom and the bride have never even met each other before the day of the wedding.
It's pretty sweet. You can't blame yourself if you pick the wrong groom.
That's true. It's an out for you if you end up on Springer.
It was arranged.
I didn't know nothing to do with it. She looked like a water buffalo. What do you want a guy to do? Sure, my father said, oh, dad is rich. I'll have a carpet shop. But no! So I got drunk. What do you mean do?
It's pretty bad though that you know your brother would jump up there and kind of betray you.
I
so
don't know
quickly.
you snatched your date's sister.
No. They decided. I didn't have much to do with that whole transaction. That was
it was a deal between they made between themselves.
Yeah, that was a switcheroo. Christy never liked me really.
Kelly had a pair of shoes that Christy really liked, so they swapped out the shoes.
Shoes for Joe.
Yeah. Fair trade.
She never liked me that way. We were only friends. We met, you know. One night of necking at a Halloween party. Very little necking, even.
Is she pretty good at necking?
Don't really remember that, to be honest with you.
Boy, you're getting better. You're really getting better.
But that was you know, their deal more than anything.
The younger brother readily agreed to take the groom's place beside the beautiful teenage bride at her family's invitation. The groom apologized for his behavior, but has been crying that word will spread and he will never get a bride again.
Reputation is everything when it comes to families in India. If you are labeled as a drunkard or no good or can't provide for a bride, you're toast. You're not going to get married.
Dang.
Is reputation important here in America? Not really.
Not
right?
Apparently.
Nah, you can overcome drunkard pretty easily.
Yeah, you can go back and make another film about the Holocaust if you want. If you
got to have good money coming in.
That's right.
Wow. You think you should be more? Do you think we should be less forgiving or more forgiving in this country? Or we got it just about right?
We are such a country of individualists that you can literally recreate yourself tomorrow if you wanted to, and people would buy it. And that's why America is what it is.
Well, we're such a country of double standards, too. Some people we will never forgive, and some other folks we just can't wait to build them up, tear them down, build them up again. It's a machine.
Why do we? How do you get to be the one we will never forgive? And how do you get to be the one that gets to rebuild himself? I mean, do you have any choice in that, or is it just whatever the media is into?
It's whatever the media is into. This week's flavor of cause, I think, has a lot to do with it.
All right, so I had a prize here, and I wondered, you know, we have this drunken groom loses bride to sober brother. We have Joe, a knight in Necken, switches to a different sister. Is there anybody else out there who snatched a sibling? We have some tickets and a medium pizza at the Main Stage Comedy and Music Club. We'll call it Snatch a Sibling Night.
Can we get a table for three of you and both sibs?
How far down the road?
Typically,
were you?
You don't triple date after that. Yeah.
How far down the road were you with the other one?
Before you snatched the sibling?
Were the wedding
invitations?
Was it just
one night of necking like Joe?
Yeah. Were the wedding invitations out? I don't think anybody would be at the altar and do that. This has to be a first. 800-252-1025.
Think we'll get anybody? It's going to be one of those where it's just you and this guy in India.
I thought this was a pretty rare story when Joe told it, to have it pop up again like that.
Yeah, I'm sure you might have met somebody first, but to get too far along, it's pretty
weird. Are you friends with the sister now?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we're...
Did it bother you that she didn't like you in that way?
No.
It always bothers me when a woman says,
It amazes me that my wife...
You're wonderful, but, oh, God, who with that with you?
On.
Oh, man. Ooh.
Man, take your sweater off. Oh,
I had
that's
so many women tell me that when I was dating. It's like, no, you're fine to, like, buy me dinner and stuff, but... Oh, that? Are you kidding? You?
Now, your brother.
No, I knew, you know, once she sobered up, I mean, there was one night, and then when she saw me in the light of day, I knew she probably wasn't going to like me, and it amazes me that my wife does.
You mean she initially saw you in very dim lighting?
Oh, yeah, in very dim lighting in a tuxedo.
And beer goggles.
I was looking my best when she saw
all
me.
All cleaned up, had a mint in his mouth at the time. Yeah.
And, I'm still amazed to this day that, you know,
Kelly wants you.
Kelly liked me and said, that's exactly what I was looking for.
Kelly saw your heart and soul.
Yeah.
Kelly saw a good man.
Yeah.
A good father. Potentially a good provider, even though you were only making 15 grand at the time.
She knew, you know, it was it was one of those. It's kind of like grapes. You got to plant a grape bush and wait for years for it to actually bear
fruit.
Well,
she had a sense about you like, what's her name in that alien movie, Species, Natasha Henstridge.
One has faulty DNA.
No, she had a sense that you were a good man and it was going to be a great life. She's very smart. All right. Anybody out there snatch a sibling? 1-800-252-1025. Brian, hello.
Oh, how are you today?
Good.
Cock-a-doodle-doo.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I was married to one lady, found out she was the biggest witch there was, and actually divorced her 8 years later and married her sister.
Nice.
Whoa.
We have a child together, so now we're aunt mom and uncle dad.
You got a child with the witch?
I have two children with the witch, and actually she has a daughter that I claim as mine because she was my stepdaughter. And then my wife has a son, and then my wife and I have a 10-month-old baby girl.
So you've had kids with both of these.
Both sisters.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good.
That's great.
It's easier on grandma's day.
It's a barbecue. It's a barbecuer's dream.
Yeah, it is.
So, Brian, which sister is hotter looking? Be honest.
The one I'm married to.
The one now?
there's three sisters.
By the way, before I even get you to answer, which he already did without even thinking about it, it's a trick question. Because if the one you're with now is hotter, that means while you were with her sister, you knew that too.
Oh, yeah. I wanted her before I dated her sister. And
he
then
fell right over. He didn't even
Boom, baby. Here, could you hold this 8x10 of your sister while we make the nasty? Thanks, I'd appreciate that.
You have the younger one now?
Yes, I have the youngest one.
You traded in for the younger sister. How's the rest of the family with that? Did they freak?
Oh, we didn't tell them until after we got married. We got married in Las Vegas and told them afterwards. I told her, you need to let them know at least today after we got married. And she said they were all right. The ex-wife said she was okay with it, but we know she's not.
Right.
And the rest of the family treat me, they don't like me, but that's no big deal.
All right. Well, you get two tickets to Snatch a Sibling Night at the Main Stage Comedy and Music Club. You got to be 21 or older. Is she 21? Is she 16 at least?
Yeah, she's much older than 21.
All right. That's good.
How about the third sister? Is she even younger?
No, she's the oldest.
Okay, good.
And the third sister, is she hot too?
No.
No? Okay. God, I do.
And they don't like you, huh?
I do hope they live in another state. All right, hold on. Hold on. I think he's exactly right for Snatch a Sibling Night. 1-800-252-1025. We still have a few more passes to give away. Tracy, hello.
Okay.
Jan?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
My mom and dad got divorced, and 20 years later, my mom married my dad's brother, so my uncle became my stepfather, and all my cousins became my brothers and sisters.
But cue the country song.
I'm my own grandpa. She waited two decades, though, huh?
That's poor.
Yeah, but they were actually perfect for each other. They should have done it to begin with.
All right, now, are they still around? No,
they're both deceased now.
Moved on,
right. Yeah. But all my cousins, you know, they are sisters and brothers, so...
My cousins are sisters and brothers. Tracy, hold on. Just
you guys don't allow liquor at your family reunions,
it's going to be a quiet Snatch the Sibling Night at the Main Stage Comedy Music Club, because you're the only other caller. So we'll give you some passes. Hold on a sec, okay?
Right on, thanks.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. If anybody out there wants to dip their toe in the water, 1-800-252-1025. Ian is in Polsbo. Ian, go ahead.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Were you calling in for Snatch the Sibling Night at Main Stage Comedy and Music Club?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was dating a girl and really had a thing for a twin sister, and as soon as she became available, I snatched her.
Are you married?
I am now, yeah.
Yeah. And was this your wife's twin sister?
Yeah.
Were you engaged to the other twin?
I just think he can't afford tickets to a comedy club.
not engaged, no.
How far along had you gone?
We got a little farther than Joe had, but not too much farther.
Not too much farther, yeah. Second base?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't know where second base is.
What is that
is
anymore, anyway?
I don't know what it is, because they've added like five bases.
I know.
Second base is naughty bunting. Parts, but close still on. Through the close.
Through the close?
Through the close.
Was it through the close?
It was under the close.
Yeah, under the close.
Third
yeah.
base, heading toward third.
Two and a half.
Coach is giving him a stop sign.
All right. And how old are you, Ian?
I'm 23.
23 years old. And you're married now, and it was your wife's twin sister.
Yeah.
And is that how you met your wife? Similar to Joe.
Yeah, that's how I met my wife, yeah. Right.
What's your wife's name?
Jamie.
And her sister's name?
Hello?
Hello?
What's your sister's
she
name?
She wants comedy tickets. All right, hold on, we'll give you some tickets. We might
see,
as well
I,
be there.
I don't think he married the twin.
Oh.
I think he got married to a whole different gal, but he has a twin story in his background.
Oh, this is a story from your past.
Yeah, I ended up dating the second twin.
All right, I believe him now.
He married the second twin.
He married the second twin?
What's your sister, your wife's sister's name?
It's easier to just give him the ticket.
I know.
Hold on. Sure. All are welcome at the temple. Julie is in Graham. Julie, hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
first-time caller.
Welcome. Finally a topic you can relate to.
Unfortunately, yes. Back in the late 50s, my dad dated one of my mom's sisters. He had six to choose from. And then he decided to start dating my mom, and they got married in 1962. And thank God they did, otherwise I wouldn't be here.
Very important that he was had an eye on the other sister. All right, Julie, hang on. We'll send her too. But I think on the country station, this would have been a barn burner.
And I think if you push it back a generation to moms and dads, there was a lot of that.
Yeah, there's less of it now.
Small towns, less people to choose from.
We'll leave the phones open for another 5 minutes.
Wherever you are.
These people are like the Munchkins, you know. They weren't calling. Now the phones are all jammed.
So like he's already had a child with both the sisters. Come on, you can come out now.
These are people who dated a sibling. Snatched a sibling night. By the way, I hope I'm not in trouble with the Main Stage Comedy and Music Club, the hot new comedy club, the one that brought us Emo Phillips a couple weeks ago, because I had permission to give away tickets, but I didn't have permission to call it Snatch a Sibling Night.
Don't expect a big banner over the stage or anything.
Oh, I'd
like to welcome up Freddie. Put a spotlight on this couple over here. One of the overalls, yeah.
All right. Alan is in Marysville. Alan married a twin but dated the other without realizing it. Explain, Alan.
Well, it's good. About 20 years ago, I was at a best friend's wedding reception, and I met this gal, and we started dancing, get along while the night went on, and we went our separate ways. Well, a couple weeks later, I was invited to another party telling me she'd be there. Well, as it progressed, finding out after that party was her twin sister, and a year or so down the road, we ended up getting married, and that was...
to the original twin, yeah. And the twin sister you were with, you thought was the first woman of your affections. The one you liked at the first party. Right?
Yep.
And she couldn't, you sure about she couldn't that remember now. Your date, but that was okay. That blackout thing's kind of attractive.
Things progressed.
Yeah, it was kind of ironic, but...
He's got to go to work.
Okay.
Joe's doubting him.
Well, I'm doubting his story, but maybe he just can't say too much.
Just can't
maybe
speak too loudly.
Boss
right yeah, but I had her all spread out all the pickup truck.
The company truck.
Construction.
So you married number one or number two?
Number two.
What's your wife's name?
Candy.
What's her sister's name?
Liquor.
Carmen.
What is it?
Carmen.
Carmen. All right. Okay, I totally
believe that. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, if you got two names ready.
Well, they both start with the same letter.
Gary in Tacoma, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I was about 2 years ago, I was practicing at my band, you know, across the street from this lady's house. And I had to go to the bathroom really bad, so I went over and knocked on the door. And I ended up meeting this lady, and that same night we did the thing and had fun. And anyway...
I'm so shy about
it. Thing,
yeah.
Have fun.
About 2 weeks later, we broke up, and I started dating her twin sister, who lived there with her. Now, I live there in their attic, and I'm engaged to her sister.
So twins basically clean up, is what you all are telling us.
Right. Twins clean up.
Twins
yeah.
clean up. It's you like a little one. Dating trap.
You date one, I don't want them, how about you? That's what happened with you.
Yeah, but we never... did the thing, or whatever you want to call it.
Had fun.
I'm glad we never even went to second base.
I mean, you weren't a rock star looking for a bathroom. That's
you're happy with a night
of
necking at that point. Yeah. That was even a score for you, a night of necking, right?
Oh,
you weren't getting a lot at that time.
No, I've never had a lot.
Never had lots of sex.
No.
I love you guys' show, and just so I got called in, so I just love you guys' show.
Gary, we thank you for coming out. Hang on. It's not coming out, but you know what I mean. Bob in Seattle. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, how are you? I got kind of a similar thing, not quite the sibling thing, but I was dating the daughter, and we engaged to be married, and lo and behold, about a month before the wedding, I met the mother, and I ended up marrying the mother.
No kidding. Age difference?
Yeah, I'm 10 years older than Robin, and 6 years younger than the mom.
And, you know, I'm kind of right in between, so it I don't know. You know, family reunions are kind of tough, but sure. I really love the mom.
You really love right. the mom.
When you first started dating the mom, did you ever try to play that whole mother-daughter card?
Oh, no.
Spike!
I'm just checking.
How dare you go
Very revealing about you, though, my
I'm
friend.
I'm just telling you, this guy, look, the daughter's 10 years younger, that's cool. The mom's 6 years older, that's cool, too. I mean, why not?
You know
play
I mean?
Your cards.
For what, I mean, from dating the mom and being engaged to the daughter at first, to do the daughter and mom things, that was more taboo than I ever wanted to go.
Yeah, I say go with the one who has the most record albums in the collection in common with you. You know
well,
what I mean?
About the most record albums, but I think the mom knows how to spin the best.
Well, you...
There you go.
You went so far as to be engaged to the daughter, though. How does it go when you tell her the engagement's off because I'm going to date your mom?
Oh, that wasn't a pretty thing, I'll tell you.
Oh, he's ugly.
A lot of soul searching.
Give me the words you used. Pretend I'm the daughter.
You know, we've been married now for 5 years, and I don't even recall all the words I used with her, but no, it wasn't a nice thing.
Well, just pretend. Recreate it for me, like in one of those 911 episodes with William Shatner.
You know, it was painful. I don't know if I could go there.
Honey, it seems like something's on your mind. Is there something you want to tell me?
Pretend Spike's her. Go ahead.
Almost like that. She has a prettier voice, though.
Well, what is it? Aren't my boobs perky enough?
Not nearly perky enough.
What is it? Am I too immature?
I really can't. You know, I don't know if she's listening. And
I just wanted some quick tickets. Hope I could sneak in, sneak out.
Hey, you got to pay your way here.
Have you met someone else?
Hello?
Have you met someone else?
No. I'm still happily married to the mom.
Okay. He wants to be in real time. All right, hold on, Bob. Yeah, he can definitely come. Oh, man, I better clear this with Julie. With a sibling
night.
Oh,
no, it's over. She's never going to work with us again.
Rod, hello.
Hello.
How you doing, Rod?
Oh, not too bad.
At this point, I'm taking names, but I don't know if I have this many tickets to give, so just tell us your story anyway.
Okay. I dated my wife's younger sister for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and then we had broken up.
What did you break up over?
Well, actually, we kind of moved into a house with a proposed buddy of mine, and 2 weeks later, I found out they were getting together, so...
So your wife's younger sister left you for your best friend?
Yeah.
All right, then what happened?
Well, then I left... went and stayed at my mom's house, and then I went and saw their older sister for just a couple of nights, and then probably a couple of weeks later I started seeing my wife, which is the middle sister.
Oh, it's the Holy Trinity of
Cinderella.
Cinderella. Yes,
I think it is.
So you know all three sisters.
Yeah, I been with my wife now for 19 years.
19 years, I think she's forgiven it by now, yeah. But you've read the Bible with all three of them.
Yeah.
That was the best friend. Did he make an honest woman out of the youngest sister, or was that just a passing fling?
No, actually, they got married.
They got married, too.
There you go.
And actually now they're getting a divorce, so...
Oh, well, super.
Well, she might be available again.
Thank you, Rod. I think you definitely qualify. Dated a sibling.
He dated two, though. That guy's got to get the front table.
Michelle, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. This guy was having a senior prom. I was a junior. I went to a senior prom. We were friends. Dated his older brother for a few months and married his middle brother, and we've had our 37th anniversary.
Oh, wow. That's long term. Wow. Fantastic. Yep. Yeah. And you guys probably laugh about it now after this many years, right?
Sort of. My husband.
Sort of.
We don't bring it up.
Sort of.
I laugh, he cries.
But, no, yeah, it worked.
Yeah.
The outcast in the family for a long time. You know how that goes.
Oh, you were outcasts. They did not.
Oh, yeah.
Oh boy.
But, you know, it's the way it goes.
Hold on. Melanie.
Thanksgiving, there's a kids' table, and then there's the incestuous dirty backyard table. That's out in the garage. You guys sit over there far away from the kids' table.
Melanie in Orting. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Melanie.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes, I am. I think so.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. I was really young. I was between 17 and 18 years old. I was dating this guy. And we got pretty serious, and I ended up moving out of the house, and we lived together for over 2 years. And it was a really, you know, we were young, it was a really rocky road, rocky relationship, and it was quite abusive. And I was dating the older brother, and the younger brother, him and I were always friends through the whole thing, and before I knew him, before I dated the older brother.
So he was the one that was the nice guy. And you, like so many people, chose the mean guy to be your boyfriend. Women always do that. I don't know why.
Well, he had
the
Camaro.
Dangerous, the
he
one with
Camaro,
the Marlboro man. Yeah,
I had a bird on the hood of a Trans Am. What can I do? I was wooed.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah.
And one day the younger brother had decided he had had enough and has tired of watching his brother be, you know, not very nice to me. And at that day, we ended up breaking up. I broke up with the older brother, and Ben was seeing the younger brother as friends for about 3 months, and then we started dating, and got married a year and a half after that, and we've been together for 17 years and have three children.
So you are the story.
When
in
you
India.
Say seeing him as friends, like platonic friends for a while, you did a platonic period, or was
yeah,
it friends
it
with?
Was platonic for a couple months.
Friends
it
with
was,
copay.
Yeah.
Friends with benefits. I don't know how that works.
Well, it was platonic on your end, but he's like, I'll be done in a minute.
Rutger Hauer is one scary dude. He's appeared in over 100 movies and is rarely playing the type of person you'd invite to dinner. He was the hitcher in the thriller by the same name. The replicant in Blade Runner, and the villainous vampire Lothos. Is that how you say it? Lothos?
Lothos.
Lothos. The original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie. Now, Rutger is reflecting on his stellar career and his life with his memoir, All Those Moments, Stories of Heroes, Villains, Replicants, and Blade Runners. Rutger Hauer, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show, sir. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Hi. How are you?
Good. It's good to have you.
I have very warm feelings for Seattle.
Do you?
Yeah. I was. I think I had a screening there, and I got a Best Actor award for a film that I did in Italy, in France. Legend of the Holy Drinker. And also, you know, really in the beginning, if not for two boys in Seattle who fought for Soldier of Orange in its original version, I wouldn't be talking to you. They got it into the festival there and invited me to come over. And there were two versions of that film, and the other version was really bad. And and of course, that film just sort of helped me make the step to America.
As you reflect on your past, which obviously you had to do for this memoir, the film industry is that way. It seems that there's a battle to get your art noticed and to give it, you know, the power and the leverage to even have a chance to be seen. And a lot of it comes down to whether the right person can see it and cut you the break.
I totally. It's the biggest part is, and I guess we call it luck, but it's the coincidences that line up. So that there is a possibility. It's amazing. And like I said, you know, if not for the two, I can't remember their names in the Egyptian theater. But anyway, so if not for them, I wouldn't be here. I would not be sitting here.
It's nice that you remember them. You know, as I look through some of the descriptions of your life, you could attach various careers to you. Deckhand, handyman, almost RoboCop. Grandpa, environmentalist.
Uh-huh.
If, for some reason, the acting stars had not lined up, would you have settled on one career, and do you have any idea what it might have been?
I started so early, you know. I started acting when I was 11, and I never thought I would be an actor. But, you know, I can take a guess. I would love to be a veterinarian or, you know, that would come to mind, and let's just leave it at that.
That's a nice profession. And now at 15, it says here you ran away. Is that right? You ran away from?
Yeah, I didn't run away. I was just done with the school and
done with school.
Loved the street and I loved the outside world. I
I wanted to discover anything that was, you know, beyond the horizon, pretty much. And then I thought, you know, if I can be a sailor, which is sort of in my blood, that would work for me. And I think it opened up the world literally for me to know that I really love traveling, and I can be away from home, and it's in my nature almost to be away from home. And actors by nature are that way, and that's how we started out, you know. So there seems to be a match there that I discovered at a very early age. And of course, it was very adventurous. The world really opened up. I saw all these different cultures, the poverty mostly. You know, it's really good to know, you know, how fortunate you are just by being born somewhere. You know,
your grandfather was a schooner captain, and you took to the sea for your first job. But I read that you're colorblind, and isn't the whole red on the right, green on the left thing pretty important as a sailor?
What the colorblind stuff?
Are you colorblind?
Yeah, it's sort of a heavy way of saying, you know, that I see different colors.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, between red and green, it shouldn't be too confusing. And my grandfather was colorblind as well, but the lights, the navigation lights were fires when he was sailing. You know, there were no colors there, and the moment they started to use buoys and colored lights, they had to take him off his ship. He was grounded, so to speak.
Wow. So there's some confusion as to what exactly colorblind means. It doesn't mean you're blind to colors. It means you see them differently, right?
See different colors.
Yeah.
You see shades of different colors, and some colors blend. You know, if there's more red in one color or more blue, you may pick up on that a little more. So you see it. It shifts on you. That's what's sort of scary. And I've been a sailor, and I because of the GPS, it's a lot easier
to get anywhere.
And to know where you are.
Yeah.
But the colored lights were always, I always had to have somebody else and go, is this red or green, or am I not, you know.
You must have been annoyed when the whole terrorism alert went to a color code system.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Hitcher, Rutger, has to be maybe the scariest movie ever made, certainly one of the scariest movies ever made, and you were one of the most villainous guys ever. In fact, they remade the movie, and the DVD is coming out this week. Is it flattering to you that they remake a film that you were in, or do you think your work should have stood as it is without the need of somebody else coming in and redoing the whole thing?
I don't know. You can call it flattering, but I don't think they should touch it. I think it's, why not come up with a new film? I say, you know, let's just make other films rather than remakes. That's my take on it.
Yeah, if they come up with a new film, though, it has to be Spider-Man 16. I mean, they have to know that it already makes money.
There you go.
Rutger, do you ever, just for fun, like, go out and pick up hitchhikers just to scare the bejesus out of them?
No, I'd rather hitchhike myself.
That would be a little worse.
Hey, Rucker, Blade Runner is probably my all-time favorite movie. Having made that, and it's been 25 years now, what is your vision of the future? Do you think we're headed in a kind of a bleak, desperate situation in the future, or are you more optimistic?
Well, the funny thing is, it really depends on how you look at it, right? And that's sort of my profession as well. You know, a film is how you look at it, so you can take your pick. I think we're not doing it quite right. I think we should improve a little bit, on the way we handle things here on Earth. One of the things that I think is interesting is that we know now by DNA that where we came from, you know, where we started, you know, and we all started in Africa, and we were all black. So I think discrimination is sort of so old now, and it's the colors are starting to fade, and so let's just do away with that, and sort of join forces in saving the planet a bit, you know.
I would hope that's true.
You mentioned at the beginning that if it were not for the Seattle International Film Festival showing Soldier of Orange, you might not even be talking to us and might not have a career.
That's right.
Do you think now the Internet, the way it's linked us all, might help some films get out that otherwise would have never been seen if it weren't for little film festivals?
Sure, it's helping. I mean, you know, I'm fascinated by the Internet, and I'm working with it for the next time to come. I think it may possibly be a phase of transition, because because of film as we know it, and I'm not saying this because I think so, I think quite a few of my masters, my older masters, think so. Film is sort of, you know, dead as we know it. We're sort of exploring new venues. And I think maybe we don't quite know where this is going to go, but it's going to go somewhere. You know, if once the gas starts to become a problem, which is also not that far in the future, film, they won't be able to make film, you know. So that part, we have to go digital for a while until we find another medium that is, you know, that compares in quality and is as good as film as we know it.
Atger.
You know, we're in transition, and I think you can see it in the whole industry. People are very confused. And what I like about a lot of it is that the internet is, for now, the internet is driven by people and not just by businesses. It's, we are forced to look at it, you know. Hotel television is moving, you know, they're going there because they've lost, like, a lot of their audiences who go to the internet because there's more fun to be had there, and sometimes it's even better, you know. So, interesting.
Rutger, it's very nice to meet you. The memoir, All Those Moments, Stories of Heroes, Villains, Replicants, and Blade Runners. Good luck with it.
Thank you.